my flimsy gown for a blue jumpsuit. Assigned a bunk in Barracks 10. Whipped back into shape by 3 squares a day and brutal physical training. But most of all by Resnick, the regiment's senior drill instructor. The man who smashed Ben Parrish into a million pieces, then reconstructed him into the merciless zombie-killing machine that he is today. Don't get me wrong. Resnick is a cruel, unfeeling, sadistic bastard. I fall asleep every night fantasizing about ways to kill him. From day one, he's made it his mission to make my life as miserable as possible, and he's pretty much succeeded. I've been slapped, punched, pushed, kicked, and spat on. I've been ridiculed, mocked, and screamed at until my ears rang. Forced to stand for hours in the freezing rain, scrub the entire barracks floor with a toothbrush, disassemble and reassemble my rifle until my fingers bled, run until my legs turned to jelly. You get the idea. I didn't get it, though. Not at first. Was he training me to be a soldier or trying to kill me? I was pretty sure it was the latter. Then I realized it was both. He really was training me to be a soldier. By trying to kill me. I'll give you just one example. One's enough. Morning calisthenics in the yard. Every squad in the regiment. Over 300 troops. And Resnick picks this time to publicly humiliate me. Looming over me, his legs spread wide, hands on knees, his fleshy, pockmarked face close to mine as I dipped into push-up number 79. Private Zombie, did your mother have any children that lived? Sir, yes, sir! I bet when you were born she took one look at you and tried to shove you back in! Jamming the heel of his black boot into my ass to force me down. My squad is doing knuckle push-ups on the asphalt trail that rings the yard, because the ground is frozen solid and asphalt absorbs blood. You don't slip around as much. He wants to make me fail before I reach 100. I push against his heel. No way I'm starting over. Not in front of the entire regiment. I can feel my fellow recruits watching me. Waiting for my inevitable collapse. Waiting for Resnick to win. Resnick always wins. Private Zombie! Do you think I'm mean? Sir, no, sir! My muscles burn. My knuckles are scraped raw. I've gained back some of the weight. But have I gotten back the heart? 88. 89. Almost there. Do you hate my guts? Sir, no, sir! 93. 94. Someone from another squad whispers, "Who is that guy?" And someone else, a girl's voice, says, "His name is Zombie." Are you a killer, Private Zombie? Sir, yes, sir! Do you eat alien brains for breakfast? Sir, yes, sir! 95. 96. The yard is funeral quiet. I'm not the only recruit who loathes Resnick. One of these days, somebody's going to beat him at his own game. That's the prayer. That's what's on my shoulders as I fight to 100. Bullshit! I hear you're a coward. I hear you run from a fight. Sir, no, sir! 97. 98. 2 more and I've won. I hear the same girl, she must be standing close by, whisper, "Come on." On the 99th push-up, Resnick shoves me down with his heel. I fall hard on my chest, roll my cheek against the asphalt, and there's his puffy face and tiny pale eyes an inch from mine. 99. 1 short. The bastard. Private Zombie, you are a disgrace to the species. I've hacked up loogies tougher than you. You make me think the enemy was right about the human race. You should be ground up for slop and passed out a hog shithole. Well, what are you waiting for, you stinking bag of regurgitated puke? An effing invitation? My head rolls to one side. An invitation would be nice, thank you, sir. I see a girl around my age standing with her squad, her arms folded across her chest, shaking her head at me. Poor Zombie. She isn't smiling. Dark eyes, dark hair, skin so fair it seems to be glowing in the early morning light. I have the feeling I know her from somewhere, though this is the first time I remember seeing her. There are hundreds of kids being trained for war and hundreds more arriving every day, handed blue jumpsuits, assigned to squads, packed into the barracks ringing the yard. but she has the kind of face you remember.
Get up, you maggot! Get up and give me 100 more! 100 more, or by God, I will rip out your eyeballs and hang them from my rear view like a pair of fuzzy dice! I'm totally spent. I don't think I've got enough left for even one more.
Resnick doesn't give a crap about what I think. That's the other thing it took me a while to understand. They not only don't care what I think, they don't want me to think. His face is so close to mine, I could smell his breath. It smells like spearmint.
What is it, sweetheart? Are you tired? Do you want nappy time?
Do I have at least one push-up left in me? If I can do just one more, I won't be a total loser. I press my forehead against the asphalt and close my eyes. There is a place I go, a space I found inside me after Commander Varr showed me the final battlefield, a center of complete stillness that isn't touched by fatigue or hopelessness or anger or anything brought on by the coming of the big green eye in the sky. In that place, I have no name. I'm not Ben or Zombie. I just am. Whole, untouchable, unbroken. The last living person in the universe who contains all human potential, including the potential to give the biggest asshole on Earth just one more. And I do. Chapter 43. Not that there's anything special about me. Resnick is an equal opportunity sadist. He treats the 6 other recruits of Squad 53 with the same savage indecency. Flintstone, who's my age, with his big head and bushy unibrow. Tank, the skinny, quick-tempered farm boy. Dumbo, the 12-year-old with the big ears and quick smile that disappeared quickly during the first week of basic. Poundcake, the 8-year-old who never talks but who's our best shot by far. Oompa, the chubby kid with the crooked teeth who's last in every drill but first in chow line. And finally the youngest, Teacup. The meanest 7-year-old you'll ever meet. The most gung-ho of all of us. Who worships the ground Resnick walks on, no matter how much he's screamed at or kicked around. I don't know their real names. We don't talk about who we were before, or how we came to the camp, or what happened to our families. None of that matters. Like Ben Parrish, those guys, the pre-Flintstone, pre-Tank, pre-Dumbo, etc., they're dead. Tagged, bagged, and told we are the last. Best hope for humanity. We are the new wine poured into old skins. We bonded through hatred. Hatred of the infesteds and their alien masters, sure, but also our fierce, uncompromising, unadulterated hatred of Sergeant Resnick, our rage made all the more intense by the fact that we could never express it. Then the kid named Nugget was assigned to Barracks 10, and one of us, like an idiot, couldn't hold it inside any longer, and all the bottled-up fury exploded free. I'll give you one guess who that idiot was. I couldn't believe it when that kid showed up at roll call. 5 years old, tops, lost in his white jumpsuit, shivering in the cold morning air of the yard, looking like he was going to be sick, obviously scared out of his mind. And here comes Resnick with his hat pulled low over his beady eyes and his boots shined to a mirror finish, and his voice perpetually hoarse from screaming, shoving his pasty, pockmarked grill down into the poor kid's face. I don't know how the little squirt kept from soiling himself. Resnick always starts out slow and soft and builds to a big finish. The better to lull you into thinking he might be an actual human being.
Well, what do we have here? What have they sent us from Central Casting? Is this a hobbit? Are you a magical creature from a storybook realm come to enchant me with your dark magic?
Resnick was just getting warmed up, and already the kid was fighting back tears. Fresh off the bus after going through God knows what on the outside, and here's this crazy middle-aged man pouncing on him. I wondered how he was processing Resnick, or any of this craziness they call Camp Haven. I'm still trying to deal, and I'm a lot older than 5.
Oh, this is cute! This is so precious, I think I might cry. Dear God, I've dunked chicken nuggets bigger than you in my little plastic cup of spicy barbecue sauce!
Ratcheting up the volume as he brought his face closer to the kid's. And the kid holding up surprisingly well, flinching, eyes darting back and forth,
but not moving an inch when I knew he must be thinking about taking off across the yard, just running until he couldn't run anymore.
What's your story, Private Nugget? Have you lost your mommy? Do you want to go home? I know! Let's close our eyes and make a wish, and maybe mommy will come and take us all home. Wouldn't that be nice, Private Nugget?
And the kid nodded, eagerly, like Resnick had asked the question he'd been waiting to hear.
Finally, somebody got to the point.
Lifting up his big teddy bear eyes into the drill sergeant's beady ones, it was enough to break your heart. It was enough to make you scream. But you don't scream. You stand perfectly still, eyes forward, hands at your sides, chest out, heartbreaking, watching it out of the corner of your eye while something comes loose inside you, uncoiling like a rattlesnake striking. Something you've been holding in for a long time as the pressure built. You don't know when it's going to blow. You can't predict it. And when it happens, there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Leave him alone!
Resnick whipped around. No one made a sound. You could hear the inward gasp. On the other side of the line, Flintstone's eyes were wide. He couldn't believe what I just did. I couldn't either.
Who said that? Which one of you scum-sucking maggots just signed his own death warrant?
Striding down the line, face red with fury, hands clenched into fists, knuckles bone white.
Nobody, huh? Well, I'm going to fall on my knees and cover my head, because the Lord God, his holy self, has spoken to me from on high.
He stopped in front of Tank, who was sweating through his jumpsuit, though it was about 40 degrees outside.
Was it you, Puckerhole? I will tear your arms off!
He brought his fist back to punch Tank in the groin. Cue the idiot.
Sir, I said it, sir!
I shouted. Resnick's about face was slow this time. His journey over to me took 1,000 years. In the distance, a crow's harsh call. But that was the only sound I heard. He stopped just inside my range of vision. Not directly in front of me, and that wasn't good. I couldn't turn toward him. I had to keep my eyes forward. Worst of all, I couldn't see his hands. I wouldn't know when, or where, the blow would land, which meant I wouldn't know when to brace for it.
So Private Zombie is giving the orders now, Resnick said, so softly I could barely hear him. Private Zombie is Squad 53's very own catcher in the fucking rye. Private Zombie, I think I have a crush on you. You make me weak in the knees. You make me hate my own mother for giving birth to a male child, so now it's impossible for me to have your babies.
Where was it going to land? My knees? My crotch? Probably the stomach? Resnick has a soft spot for stomachs. Nope. It was a chop to my Adam's apple with the side of his hand. I staggered backward, fighting to stay upright, fighting to keep my hands at my sides, not going to give him the satisfaction, not going to give him an excuse to hit me again. The yard and the barracks were ringing, then jiggled and melted a little as my eyes filled with tears. Of pain, sure, but of something else, too.
Sir, he's just a little kid, sir.
I choked out.
Private Zombie, you have 2 seconds, exactly 2 seconds, to seal that sewer pipe posing as a mouth, or I will incinerate your ass with the rest of the infested alien sons of bitches.
He took a deep breath, revving up for the next verbal barrage. Having completely lost my mind, I opened my mouth and let the words come out. I'll be honest, part of me was filled with relief and something that felt a hell of a lot like joy. I had kept that hate inside for too long.
Then the senior drill instructor should do it, sir! The private really doesn't care, sir! Just leave the kid alone.
Total silence. Even the crow stopped fussing. The rest of the squad had stopped breathing. I knew what they were thinking. We'd all heard the story about the lippy recruit and the accident on the obstacle course that put him in the hospital for 3 weeks. And the other story about the quiet 10-year-old who they found in the shower strung up with an extension cord. Suicide, the doctor said. A lot of people weren't so sure. Resnick didn't move.
Private Zombie, who is your squad leader?
Sir, the private squad leader is Private Flintstone, sir! Private Flintstone, front and center!
Resnick barked. Flint took one step forward and snapped off a salute. His unibrow jiggled with tension.
Private Flintstone, you're fired. Private Zombie is now squad leader. Private Zombie is ignorant and ugly, but he is not soft.
I could feel Resnick's eyes boring into my face.
Private Zombie, what happened to your baby sister?
I blinked. Twice. Trying not to show anything. My voice cracked a little when I answered, though.
Sir, the private sister is dead, sir. Because you ran like a chicken shit. Sir, the private ran like a chicken shit, sir. But you're not running now, are you, Private Zombie? Are you? Sir, no, sir.
He stepped back. Something flashed across his face. An expression I'd never seen before. It couldn't be, of course, but it looked a lot like respect.
Private Nugget, front and center!
The newbie didn't move until Poundcake gave him a poke in the back. He was crying. He didn't want to. He was trying to choke it back, but dear Jesus, what little kid wouldn't be crying by that point? Your old life barfs you out, and this is where you land?
Private Nugget, Private Zombie is your squad leader, and you will bunk with him. You will learn from him. He will teach you how to walk. He will teach you how to talk. He will teach you how to think. He will be the big brother you never had. Do you read me, Private Nugget?
Sir, yes, sir.
The tiny voice shrill and squeaky. But he got the rules down, and quickly. And that's how it began.
Chapter 44. Here's a typical day in the atypical new reality of Camp Haven. 5 o'clock a.m. Reveille and wash up. Dress and prep bunks for inspection. 5:10 a.m. Fall in. Resnick inspects our billets. Finds a wrinkle in someone's sheets. Screams for 20 minutes. Then picks another recruit at random and screams for another 20 for no real reason. Then 3 laps around the yard, freezing our asses off. Me urging Oompa and Nugget to keep up, or I get to run another lap as the last man to finish. The frozen ground beneath our boots. Our breaths frosting in the air. The twin columns of black smoke from the power plant rising beyond the airfield and the rumble of buses pulling out of the main gate. 6:30 a.m. Chow in the crowded mess hall that smells faintly like soured milk, reminding me of the plague and the fact that once upon a time I thought about just 3 things. Cars, football, and girls. In that order. I help Nugget with his tray, urging him to eat because if he doesn't eat, boot camp will kill him. Those are my exact words. Boot camp will kill you. Tank and Flintstone laugh at me mothering Nugget. Already calling me Nugget's Nana. Screw them. After chow, we check out the leaderboard. Every morning, the scores from the previous day are posted on a big board outside the mess hall. Points for marksmanship. Points for best times on the obstacle course. The air raid drills. The 2-mile runs. The top 4 squads will graduate at the end of November, and the competition is fierce. Our squad's been stuck in 10th place for weeks. 10th isn't bad, but it's not good enough. 7:30 a.m. Training. Weapons. Hand-to-hand. Basic wilderness survival. Basic urban survival. Recon. Communications. My favorite is survival training. That memorable session where we had to drink our own urine. 12 p.m. Noon chow. Some mystery meat between hard crusts of bread. Dumbo, whose jokes are as tasteless as his ears are big, cracks that we're not incinerating the infested bodies, but grinding them up to feed the troops. I have to pull teacup off him before she smacks his head with a tray. Nugget stares at his burger like it might jump off his plate and bite his face. Thanks, Dumbo. The kid's skinny enough as it is. 1 p.m. More training. Mostly on the firing range. Nugget is issued a strike for a rifle and fires pretend rounds while we fire real ones into life-size plywood cutouts. The crack of the M16s. The screech of plywood being shredded. Poundcake earns a perfect score. I'm the worst shot in the squad. I pretend the cutout is Resnick, hoping that will improve my aim. It doesn't. 5 p.m. Evening chow. Canned meat. Canned peas. Canned fruit. Nugget pushes his food around and then bursts into tears. The squad glares at me. Nugget is my responsibility. If Resnick comes down on us for conduct unbefitting, there's hell to pay, and I'm picking up the tab. Extra push-ups, reduced rations. He can even deduct some points. Nothing matters but getting through basic with enough points to graduate, get out into the field, rid ourselves of Resnick. Across the table, Flintstone is glowering at me from beneath the unibrow. He's pissed at Nugget, but more pissed at me for taking his job. Not that I asked for squad leader. He came at me after that day and growled, "I don't care what you are now. I'm gonna make sergeant when we graduate." And I'm like, "More power to you, Flint." The idea of my leading a unit into combat is ludicrous. Meanwhile, nothing I say calms Nugget down. He keeps going on about his sister, about how she promised to come for him. I wonder why the commander would stick a little kid who can't even lift a rifle into our squad. If Wonderland winnowed out the best fighters, what sort of profile did this little guy produce? 6 p.m. Drill instructor Q&A in the barracks. My favorite part of the day, where I get to spend some quality time with my favorite person in the whole wide world. After informing us what worthless piles of desiccated rat feces we are, Resnick opens the floor for questions and concerns. Most of our questions have to do with the competition, rules, procedures in case of a tie, rumors about this or that, squad cheating. Making the grade is all we can think about. Graduation means active duty, real fighting, a chance to show the ones who died that we had not survived in vain. Other topics. The status of the rescue and winnowing operation. Codename Little Bo Peep. I'm not kidding. What news from the outside? When will we hunker full-time in the underground bunker? Because obviously the enemy can see what we're doing down here, and it's only a matter of time before they vaporize us. For that, we get the standard issue reply. Commander Vosh knows what he's doing. Our job isn't to worry about strategy and logistics. Our job is to kill the enemy. 8:30 p.m. Personal time. Free of Resnick at last. We wash our jumpsuits, shine our boots, scrub the barracks floor and the latrine, clean our rifles, pass around dirty magazines, and swap other contraband like candy and chewing gum. We play cards and bust each other's nuts and complain about Resnick. We share the day's rumors and tell bad jokes and push back against the silence inside our own heads. The place where the never-ending voiceless scream rises like the superheated air above a lava flow. Inevitably, an argument erupts and stops just short of a fistfight. It's tearing away at us. We know too much. We don't know enough. Why is our regiment composed entirely of kids like us, no one over the age of 18? What happened to all the adults? Are they being taken somewhere else, and if they are, where and why? Are the Teds the final wave? Or is there another one coming, a fifth wave that will make the first four pale in comparison? Thinking about a fifth wave shuts down the conversation. 9:30 p.m. Lights out. Time to lie awake and think of a wholly new and creative way to waste Sergeant Resnick. After a while, I get tired of that and think about the girls I've dated, shuffling them around in various orders. Hottest, smartest, funniest. Blondes, brunettes. Which base I got to. They start to blend together into one girl. The girl who is no more. And in her eyes, Ben Parrish, high school hallway god, lives again. From its hiding place under my bunk, I pull out Sissy's locket and press it against my heart. No more guilt. No more grief. I will trade my self-pity for hate, my guilt for cunning, my grief for the spirit of vengeance.
Zombie!
It's Nugget in the bunk next to me.
No talking after lights out,
I whisper back.
I can't sleep. Close your eyes and think of something nice. Can we pray? Is that against the rules?
Sure, you can pray, just not out loud. I can hear him breathing, the creak of the metal frame as he flips and flops around on the bunk.
Cassie always said my prayer with me,
he confesses.
Who's Cassie? I told you.
I forgot.
Cassie's my sister. She's coming for me.
Oh, sure. I don't tell him that if she hasn't shown up by now, she's probably dead. It isn't up to me to break his heart. That's Time's job.
She's promised. Promised.
A tiny hiccup of a sob. Great. Nobody knows for sure, but we accept it as fact that the barracks are bugged, that every second Resnick is spying on us. Waiting for us to break one of the rules so we can bring the hammer down. Violating the no-talking rule at lights out will earn all of us a week of kitchen patrol.
Hey, it's all right, Nugget.
Reaching my hand out to comfort him. Finding the top of his freshly shaved head. Running my fingertips over his scalp.
Sissy liked for me to rub her head when she felt bad. Maybe Nugget likes it too.
Hey, stow that over there.
Flintstone calls out softly.
Yeah,
Tank says.
You want to get us busted, zombie? Come here.
I whisper to Nugget, scooting over and patting the mattress. I'll say a prayer with you, and then you can go to sleep, okay? The mattress gives with his added weight. Oh God, what am I doing? If Resnick pops in for a surprise inspection, I'll be peeling potatoes for a month. Nugget lies on his side facing me, and his fists rub against my arm as he brings them up to his chin.
What prayer does she say with you?
I ask.
Now I lay me,
he whispers.
Somebody put a pillow over that Nugget's face,
Dumbo says from his bunk. I can see the ambient light shining in his big brown eyes. Sissy's locket pressed against my chest, and Nugget's eyes, glittering like twin beacons in the dark. Prayers and promises. The one his sister made to him. The unspoken one I made to my sister. Prayers are promises, too. And these are the days of broken promises. All of a sudden, I want to put my fist through the wall.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep.
He joins in on the next line.
When in the morning light I wake, teach me the path of love to take.
The hisses and shushes pick up on the next stanza. Somebody hurls a pillow at us. We keep praying. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Your angels watch me through the night and keep me safe till morning's light. On angels watch me, the hissing and shushing stops. Profound stillness settles over the barracks. Our voice is slow on the last stanza, like we're reluctant to finish because on the other side of a prayer is the nothingness of another exhausted sleep, and then another day waiting for the last day, the day we will die. Even Teacup knows she probably won't live to see her 8th birthday. But we'll get up and put ourselves through 17 hours of hell anyway, because we will die, but at least we will die unbroken. And if I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Chapter 45. The next morning, I'm in Resnick's office with a special request. I know what his answer's going to be, but I'm asking anyway.
Sir, the squad leader requests that the senior drill instructor grant Private Nugget a special exemption from this morning's detail.
Private Nugget is a member of this squad, Resnick reminds me. And as a member of this squad, he is expected to perform all duties assigned by Central Command. All duties, Private.
Sir, the squad leader requests that the senior drill instructor reconsider his decision based on Private Nugget's age and...
Resnick dismisses the point with a wave of his hand. The boy didn't drop out of the damn sky, Private. If he didn't pass his prelims, he wouldn't have been assigned to your squad. But the fact of the matter is, he did pass his prelims, he was assigned to your squad, and he will perform all duties of your squad as assigned by Central Command, including P and D. Are we clear, Private?
Well, Nugget, I tried.
What's P and D?
He asks at morning chow. Processing and disposal, I answer, cutting my eyes away from him. Across from us, Dumble groans and pushes his tray away.
Great! The only way I can get through breakfast is by not thinking about it. Churn and burn, baby,
Tank says, glancing at Flintstone for approval. Those two are tight. On the day Resnick gave me the job, Tank told me he didn't care who was squad leader. He'd only listen to Flint. I shrugged. Whatever. Once we graduated, if we ever graduated, one of us would be promoted to sergeant, and I knew that someone would not be me.
Dr. Pam showed you with Ted, I say to Nugget.
He nods. From his expression, I can tell it isn't a pleasant memory.
You hit the button.
Another nod, slower than the first one. What do you think happens to the person on the other side of the glass after you hit the button? Nugget whispers.
They die.
And the sick people they bring in from the outside, ones that don't make it once they get here, what do you think happens to them?
Oh, come on, zombie, just tell him!
Oompa says. He's pushed away his food, too. A first for him. Oompa is the only one in the squad who ever goes back for seconds. To put it in the nicest way, the food in camp sucks. It isn't something we like to do, but it has to be done, I say, echoing the company line. Because this is war, you know? It's war. I look down the table for support. The only one who will make eye contact with me is Teacup, who is nodding happily. War, she says, happily. Outside the mess hall and across the yard, where several squads are drilling under the watchful eyes of their drill sergeant, Nugget trots along beside me. Zombie's dog, the squad calls him behind his back, cutting between barracks 3 and 4 to the road that leads to the power plant and the processing hangars. The day is cold and cloudy. It feels like it might snow. In the distance, the sound of a Blackhawk taking off and the sharp tat-tat-tat of automatic weapons fire. Directly in front of us, the twin towers of the plant belching black and gray smoke. The gray smoke fades into the clouds. The black lingers. A large white tent has been set up outside the entrance to the hangar. The staging area festooned with red and white biohazard warning signs. Here we suit up for processing. Once I'm dressed, I help Nugget with his orange suit, the boots, the rubber gloves, the mask, and the hood. I give him the lecture about never, ever taking off any part of his suit inside the hangar, under any circumstances, ever. He has to ask permission before handling anything, and, if he has to leave the building for any reason, he has to decon and pass inspection before re-entering. Just stick with me, I tell him. It'll be okay. He nods, and his hood bounces back and forth, the faceplate smacking him in the forehead. He's trying to hold it together, and it's not going well. So I say, they're just people, Nugget. Just people. Inside the processing hangar, the bodies of the just people are sorted, the infected from the clean, or, as we call them, the Ted from the unted. Teds are marked with bright green circles on their foreheads, but you rarely need to look. The Teds are always the freshest bodies. They've been stacked against the back wall, waiting for their turn to be laid out on the long metal tables that run the length of the hangar. The bodies are in various stages of decay. Some are months old, some look fresh enough to sit up and wave hello. It takes 3 squads to work the line. 1 squad carts the bodies over to the metal tables, another processes. A 3rd carries the processed corpses to the front and stacks them for pickup. You rotate the duties to help break up the monotony. Processing is the most interesting, and where a squad begins. I tell Nugget not to touch, just watch me until he gets the idea. Empty the pockets, separate the contents. Trash goes in 1 bin, electronics in another, precious metals in 1/3, all other metals in 1/4. Wallets, purses, paper, cash, all trash. Some of the squads can't help themselves. Old habits die hard. And walk around with wads of useless $100 bills stuffed in their pockets. Photographs, IDs, any little memento that isn't made of ceramic, trash. Almost without exception, from the oldest to the youngest, the pockets of the dead are filled to the brim with the strangest things only the owners can understand the value for. Nugget doesn't say a word. He watches me work down the line, keeping right beside me as I sidestep to the next body. The hangar is ventilated, but the smell is overpowering. Like any omnipresent smell, or rather, like anything omnipresent, you get used to it. You stop smelling it after a while. Same is true for your other senses, and your soul. After you've seen your 500th dead baby, how can you be shocked or sickened or feel anything at all? Beside me, Nugget is silent, watching. Tell me if you're going to be sick, I tell him sternly. It's horrible throwing up in your suit. The overhead speakers pop to life and the tunes begin. Most of the guys prefer rap while they process. I like to mix it up with a little heavy metal and some R&B. Nugget wants something to do, so I have him carry the ruined clothes to the laundry bins. They'll be burned with the processed corpses later that night. Disposal happens next door, in the power plant incinerator. They say the black smoke is from the coal and the gray smoke is from the bodies. I don't know if that's true. It's the hardest processing I've done. I've got Nugget, my own bodies to process, and the rest of the squad to keep an eye on, because there's no drill sergeants or any adult period inside the processing hangar except the dead ones. Just kids. And sometimes it's like at school when the teacher is suddenly called out of the room. Things can get crazy. There's little interaction among the squads outside P&D. The competition for the top slots on the leaderboard is too intense, and there's nothing friendly about the rivalry. So when I see the fair-skinned, dark-haired girl wheeling corpses from Pound Cake's table to the disposal area, I don't go over and introduce myself, and I don't grab one of her team members to ask her name. I just watch her while I dig my fingers through the pockets of dead people. I notice she's directing traffic at the door. She must be the squad leader. At the mid-morning break, I pull Poundcake aside. He's a sweet kid, quiet, but not in a weird way. Dumbo has a theory that one day the cork will pop and Poundcake won't stop talking for a week. You know that girl from Squad 19 working at your table? I ask him. He nods. Know anything about her? He shakes his head. Why am I asking you this, Cake? He shrugs. Okay, I say, but don't tell anyone I asked. By the fourth hour on the line, Nugget's not too steady on his feet. He needs a break, so I take him outside for a few minutes, where we sit against the hangar door and watch the black and gray smoke billowing beneath the clouds. Nugget yanks off his hood and leans his head against the cold metal door, his round face shiny with sweat. They're just people, I say again, basically because I don't know what else to say. It gets easier, I go on. Every time you do it, you feel it a little less. Until it's like, I don't know, like making your bunk or brushing your teeth. I'm all tense, waiting for him to lose it. Cry, run, explode, something. But there's just this blank, faraway look in his eyes. And suddenly I'm the one about to explode. Not at him, or at Resnick for making me bring him. At them. At the bastards who did this to us. Forget about my life. I know how that ends. What about Nuggets? 5 frickin' years old. And what's he got to look forward to? And why the hell did Commander Vosh assign him to a combat unit? Seriously, he can't even lift a rifle. Maybe the idea is to catch him young, train him from the ground up, so by the time he's my age, you don't have a stone-cold killer, but an ice-cold one. One with liquid nitrogen for blood. I hear his voice before I feel his hand on my forearm. Zombie? Are you okay? Sure. I'm fine. Here's a strange turn of events. I'm worried about me. A large flatbed pulls up to the hangar door, and Squad 19 begins loading bodies, tossing them onto the truck like relief workers, heaving sacks of grain. There's the dark-haired girl again, straining at the front end of a very fat corpse. She glances our way before going back inside for the next body. Great. She'll probably report us for goofing off to knock a few points off our score.
Cassie says it won't matter what they do, Nugget says. They can't kill all of us.
Why can't they? Because, kid, I'd really, really like to know.
Because we're too hard to kill. We're
Invincible?
That's it!
With a reassuring pat on my arm.
Invincible.
Black smoke, gray smoke, and the cold biting our cheeks and the heat from our bodies trapped inside our suits. Zombie and Nugget and the brooding clouds above us and, hidden above them, the mothership that gave birth to the gray smoke and, in a way, to us. Us too. Chapter 46. Every night now, Nugget crawls into my bunk after lights out to say his prayers, and I let him stay until he falls asleep. Then I carry him back to his bunk. Tank threatens to turn me in, usually after I give him an order he doesn't like. But he doesn't. I think he secretly looks forward to prayer time. It amazes me how quickly Nugget has adjusted to camp life. Kids are like that, though. They can get used to practically anything. He can't lift a rifle to his shoulder, but he does everything else, and sometimes better than the older kids. He's faster than Oompa on the obstacle course and a quicker study than Flintstone. The one squad member who can't stand him is Teacup. I guess it's jealousy. Before Nugget came, Teacup was the baby of the family. Nugget did have a mini freakout during his first air raid drill. Like the rest of us, he had no idea it was coming, but unlike the rest of us, he had no idea what the hell was going on. It happens once a month, and always in the middle of the night. The siren screams so loud you can feel the floor shaking under your bare feet as you stumble around in the dark, yanking on jumpsuit and boots, grabbing your M16, racing outside as all the barracks empty out, hundreds of recruits pouring across the yard toward the access tunnels that lead underground. I was a couple of minutes behind the squad because Nugget was hollering his head off and clinging to me like a monkey to his mama, thinking any minute the alien warships would start dropping their payloads. I shouted at him to calm down and follow my lead. It was a waste of breath. Finally, I just picked him up and slung him over my shoulder, rifle clutched in one hand and Nugget's butt in the other. As I sprinted outside, I thought of another night and another screaming kid. The memory made me run harder. Into the stairwell, down the four flights of stairs awash in yellow emergency light, Nugget's head popping against my back, then through the steel-reinforced door at the bottom, down a short passageway, through the second reinforced door, and into the complex. The heavy door clanged shut behind us, sealing us inside. By now, he had decided he might not be vaporized after all, and I could set him down. The shelter is a confusing maze of dimly lit intersecting corridors, but we've been drilled so much, I could find my way to our station with my eyes closed. I yelled over the siren for Nugget to follow me, and I took off. A squad heading in the opposite direction thundered past us. Right, left, right, right, left, into the final passageway, my free hand gripping the back of Nugget's neck to keep him from falling back. I could see my squad kneeling 20 yards from the back wall of the dead-end tunnel, their rifles trained at the metal grate that covers the air shaft leading to the surface. And Resnick, standing behind them, holding a stopwatch. Crap. We missed our time by 48 seconds. 48 seconds that would cost us 3 days of free time. 48 seconds that would drop us another place on the leaderboard. 48 seconds that meant God knows how many more days of Resnick. Back in the barracks now, we're all too hyped up to sleep. Half the squad is pissed at me, the other half is pissed at Nugget. Tank, of course, blames me.
You should have left him behind, he says,
his thin face is flushed with rage.
There's a reason we drill, Tank, I remind him.
What if this had been the real thing? Then I guess he'd be dead.
He's a member of this squad, same as the rest of us.
You still don't get it, do you, Zombie? It's frickin' nature. Whoever's too sick or weak has to go.
He yanks off his boots, hurls them into his locker at the foot of the bunk.
If it was up to me, we'd throw all of them into the incinerator with the Teds.
Killing humans. Isn't that the alien's job? His face is beet red. He pounds the air with his fists. Flintstone makes a move to calm him down, but Tank waves him away.
Whoever's too weak, too sick, too old, too slow, too stupid, or too little, they go!
Tank yells.
Anybody and everybody who can't fight or support the fight, they'll just drag us down. They're expendable,
I shoot back sarcastically.
The chain is only as strong as the weakest link,
Tank roars.
It's frickin' nature, Zombie. Only the strong survive. Hey, come on, man,
Flintstone says to him.
Zombie's right. Nugget's one of the crew. You get off my case, Flint,
Tank shouts.
All of you! Like it's my fault! Like I'm responsible for this shit! Zombie, do something,
Dumbo begs me.
He's going Dorothy.
Dumbo's referring to the recruit who snapped on the rifle range one day, turning her weapon on her own squad members. 2 people were killed and 3 seriously injured before the drill sergeant popped her in the back of the head with his sidearm. Every week there's a story about someone going Dorothy, or sometimes we say, off to see the wizard. The pressure gets to be too much, and you break. Sometimes you turn on others, sometimes you turn on yourself. Sometimes I question the wisdom of Central Command putting high-powered automatic weapons into the hands of some seriously effed-up children.
Oh, go screw yourself,
Tank snarls at Dumbo.
Like you know anything. Like anybody knows anything. What the hell are we doing here? You want to tell me, Dumbo? How about you, squad leader? Can you tell me? Somebody better tell me, and they better tell me right now, or I'm taking this place out. I'm taking all of it and all of you out because this is seriously messed up, man. We're going to take them on, the things that killed 7 billion of us? With what? With what?
Pointing the end of his rifle at Nugget, who was clinging to my leg.
With that?
Laughing hysterically. Everybody goes stiff when the gun comes up. I hold up my empty hands and say as calmly as I can, Private, lower that weapon right now.
You're not the boss of me. Nobody's the boss of me.
Standing beside his bunk, the rifle at his hip, on the yellow brick road, all right. My eyes slide over to Flintstone, who's the closest to Tank. Standing a couple of feet to his right, Flint answers with the tiniest of nods.
Don't you dumbasses ever wonder why they haven't hit us yet?
Tank says. He's not laughing now. He's crying.
You know they can't. You know they know we're here. And you know they know what we're doing here, so why are they letting us do it?
I don't know, Tank. I say evenly.
Why? Because it doesn't matter anymore what the hell we do. It's over, man. It's done.
Swinging his gun around wildly. If it goes off.
And you, and me, and everybody else on this damn base are history. We're...
Flint's on him, ripping the rifle from his hand and shoving him down hard. Tank's head catches the edge of his bunk when he falls. He curls into a ball, holding his head in both hands, screaming at the top of his lungs. And when his lungs are empty, he fills them and lets loose again. Somehow it's worse than waving around the loaded M16. Poundcake races into the latrine to hide in one of the stalls. Dumbo covers his big ears and scoots to the head of his bunk. Oompa has sidled closer to me, right next to Nugget, who's holding onto my legs with both hands now and peeking around my hip at Tank writhing on the barracks floor. The only one unaffected by Tank's meltdown is Teacup, the 7-year-old. She's sitting on her bunk, staring stoically at him. Like every night, Tank falls to the floor and screams as if he's being murdered. And it hits me. This is murder, what they're doing to us. A very slow, very cruel murder, killing us from our souls outward. And I remember the commander's words.
It isn't about destroying our capability to fight so much as crushing our will to fight.
It is hopeless. It is crazy. Tank is the same one because he sees it clearly. Which is why he has to go.
Chapter 47. The senior drill instructor agrees with me. And the next morning, Tank is gone. Taken to the hospital for a full psych eval. His bunk remains empty for a week, while our squad, one man short, falls further and further behind in points. We'll never graduate, never trade in our blue jumpsuit for real uniforms, never venture beyond the electric fence and razor wire to prove ourselves, to pay back a fraction of what we've lost. We don't talk about Tank. It's as if Tank never existed. We have to believe the system is perfect, and Tank is a flaw in the system. Then one morning in the P&D hangar, Dumbo motions me over to his table. Dumbo is training to be the squad medic, so he has to dissect designated corpses, usually Ted's, to learn about human anatomy. When I come over, he doesn't say anything, but nods at the body lying in front of him. It's Tank. We stare at his face for a long moment. His eyes are open, staring sightlessly at the ceiling. He's so fresh, it's unnerving. Dumbo glances around the hangar to make sure no one can overhear us, and then whispers, "Don't tell Flint." I nod. "What happened?" Dumbo shakes his head. He's sweating, badly, under the protective hood.
"That's the really freaky thing, Zombie. I can't find anything."
I look back down at Tank. He isn't pale. His skin is slightly pink without a mark on it. How did Tank die? Did he go Dorothy in the psych ward, maybe overdose himself on some drugs? "What if you cut him open?" I ask.
"I'm not cutting Tank open," he says.
He's looking at me as if I just told him to jump off a cliff. I nod. Stupid idea. Dumbo is no doctor. He's a 12-year-old kid. I glance around the hangar again. "Get him off this table," I say. I don't want anyone else to see him. Including me. Tank's body is stacked with the others by the hangar doors to be disposed. He's loaded onto the transport for the final leg of his journey to the incinerators, where he will be consumed in fire, his ashes mixing with the gray smoke, and carried aloft in a column of superheated air, eventually to settle over us in particles too fine to see or feel. He'll stay with us, on us, until we shower that night, washing what's left of Tank into the drains connected to the pipes, connected to the septic tanks, where he will mix with our excrement before leaching into the ground. Chapter 48. Tank's replacement arrives 2 days later. We know he's coming, because the night before, Resnick announces it during Q&A. He won't tell us anything about him, except the name. Ringer. After he leaves, everybody in the squad is jacked up. Resnick must have named him Ringer for a reason. Nugget comes over to my bunk and asks, "What's a ringer?" "Someone who you slip into a team to give it an edge," I explain. "Somebody who's really good."
"Marksmanship," Flintstone guesses. "That's where we're weakest. Pound cakes are best, and I'm okay. But you and Dumbo and Teacup suck, and Nugget can't even shoot."
"Come over here and say I suck,"
Teacup shouts, always looking for a fight. If I were in charge, I'd give Teacup a rifle and a couple of clips and let her loose on every Ted in 100-mile radius. After the prayer, Nugget twists and squirms against my back until I can't take it anymore and hiss at him to go back to his bunk.
"Zombie, it's her."
"What's her?"
"Ringer. Cassie is Ringer."
Takes me a couple of seconds to remember who Cassie is. Oh, God, not this shit again. "I don't think Ringer is your sister. You don't know she isn't either." It almost comes out of me. "Don't be a dumbass, kid. Your sister isn't coming for you because she's dead." But I hold it in. Cassie is Nugget's silver locket. What he clings to because if he lets go, there's nothing to keep the tornado from taking him off to Oz like the other Dorothys in camp. It's why a kid army makes sense. Adults don't waste their time on magical thinking. They dwell on the same inconvenient truths that landed Tank on the dissection table. Ringer isn't at roll call the next morning. And he isn't on the morning run or a chow. We'll gear up for the range, check our weapons, head out across the yard. It's a clear day, but very cold. Nobody says much. We're all wondering where the new kid is. Nugget sees Ringer first, standing off in the distance on the firing range. And right away we can see Flintstone was right. Ringer is a hell of a marksman. The target pops out of the tall brown grass and pop, pop! The head of the target explodes. Then a different target, but the same result. Resnick is standing off to one side, operating the controls on the targets. He sees us coming and starts hitting buttons fast. The targets rocket out of the grass, one right after the other, and this Ringer kid takes them out before they can get upright with one shot. Beside me, Flintstone gives a long, appreciative whistle. He's good. Nugget gets it before the rest of us. Something about the shoulders or maybe the hips, but he goes, "It's not a he," before he takes off across the field toward the solitary figure cradling the rifle that smokes in the freezing air. She turns before he reaches her, and Nugget pulls up, first confused, then disappointed. Apparently, Ringer is not his sister. Weird that she looked taller from a distance. Around Dumbo's height, but thinner than Dumbo, and older. I'm guessing 15 or 16, with a pixie face and dark, deep-set eyes, flawless pale skin, and straight black hair. It's the eyes that get you first. The kind of eyes you search to find something there, and you come away with only two possibilities. Either what's there is so deep you can't see it, or there's nothing there at all. It's the girl from the yard. The one who caught me outside the P&D hangar with Nugget.
"Ringer is a girl,"
Teacup whispers, wrinkling her nose like she's caught a whiff of something rotten. Not only is she not the baby of the squad anymore, now she's not the only girl.
"What are we gonna do with her?"
Dumbo is on the edge of panic. I'm grinning. Can't help it. We're going to be the first squad to graduate. I say. And I'm right. Chapter 49. Ringer's first night in Barracks 10 in one word. Awkward. No banter. No dirty jokes. No macho bluster. We count the minutes ticking down to lights out like a bunch of nervous geeks on a first date. Other squads might have girls her age. We have teacup. Ringer seems oblivious to our discomfort. She sits on the edge of Tank's old bunk, disassembling and cleaning her rifle. Ringer likes her rifle. A lot. You can tell by the way she lovingly runs the oily rag up and down the length of its barrel, shining it until the cold metal gleams under the fluorescence. We are trying so hard not to stare at her, it's painful. She reassembles her weapon, places it carefully in the locker beside the bed, and comes over to my bunk. I feel something tighten in my chest. I haven't spoken to a girl my age since... when? Before the plague. And I don't think about my life before the plague. That was Ben's life, not zombies. "You're the squad leader?" she says. Her voice is flat. No emotion, like her eyes. "Why?" I answer the challenge in her question with one of my own. "Why not?" Stripped down to her skivvies and the standard-issue sleeveless t-shirt, her bangs stopping just short of her dark eyebrows, looking down at me. Dumbo and Oompa stop their card game to watch. Teacup is smiling, sensing a fight brewing. Flintstone, who has been folding laundry, drops a clean jumpsuit on top of the pile. "You're a terrible shot," Ringer says. "I have other skills," I say, crossing my arms over my chest. "Should see me with a potato peeler." "You've got a good body." Somebody laughs under his breath. I think it's Flint. "Are you an athlete?" "I used to be." She's standing over me with her fist on her hips, bare feet planted firmly on the floor. It's her eyes that get to me, the deep dark of them. Is nothing there, or nearly everything? "Football." "Good guess." "And baseball, probably. When I was younger." She changes the subject abruptly. "The guy I replaced went Dorothy." "That's right." "Why?" I shrug. "Does it matter?" She nods. "It doesn't. I was the leader of my squad." "No doubt." "Just because you're leader doesn't mean you'll make sergeant after graduation." "Sure hope that's true." "I know it's true. I asked." She turns on her bare heel and goes back to her bunk. I look down at my feet and notice my nails need trimming. Ringer's feet are very small, with nubby-type toes. When I look up again, she's heading for the showers with a towel thrown over her shoulder. She pauses at the door. "If anybody in this squad touches me, I'll kill them." There's nothing menacing or funny about the way she says it, as if she's stating a fact, like it's cold outside. "I'll spread the word," I say. "And when I'm in the shower, off limits, total privacy." "Roger that. Anything else?" She pauses, staring at me from across the room. I feel myself tense up. What next? "I like to play chess. Do you play?" Shake my head. Holler at the boys. "Any of you pervs play chess?" "No," Flint calls back. "But if she's in the mood for some strip poker..." It happens before I can get 2 inches off the mattress. Flint on the ground, holding his throat, kicking his legs like a stomped-on bug. Ringer standing over him. "Also, no demeaning, sexist, pseudo-macho remarks." "You're cool," Teacup blurts out. And she means it. Maybe she needs to rethink this whole Ringer thing. Might not be such a bad arrangement having another girl around. "That's 10 days half rations for what you just did," I tell her. Maybe Flint had it coming. But I'm still the boss when Resnick's not around, and Ringer needs to know it. "Are you writing me up?" No fear in her voice. No anger. No anything. "I'm giving you a warning." She nods. Steps away from Flint. Brushes past me on the way to fetch her toiletry kit. She smells... well... she smells like a girl,
and for a second I'm a little lightheaded.
"I'll remember you going easy on me," she says with a flip of her bangs, "when they make me 53's new squad leader."